The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome in to ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Alejandro Moreno, Shaka Hislop, and Stuart Robson. It's been a while. Last time we saw him, he was freezing his backside off outside Wembley, or maybe very hot, I don't know, English weather, you never know what
to expect. You can't tell with Stuart. You can't tell whether he's hot or he's cold.
But it's great to have you back, Robbo.
It's an absolute pleasure to be back on the show with you three. Always a pleasure.
Okay, well, we've got to get you caught up. I mean, obviously, you know all of what's been going on, but we've not heard your thoughts on some of the latest transfers. The panel have all given what they think, and we'd like to know what you make of Raphael Varane going to Manchester United, and if this now makes them title contenders, and if it doesn't, how far off are they?
Well, I think it's going to be a great combination, Varane and Maguire. Maguire's the player that can come out with the ball. Varane's got that pace to run in behind Maguire. I don't think he always reads the danger quite quickly enough. We saw that with France in the European Championships. But he's been a top-class player for many years now, both for France, for Real Madrid. And he's obviously a better player than Lindelof is. So I think he's going to be a massive improvement for Manchester United. And I think that Manchester United will be a better team this year. I'm not sure they're going to win the title, but they'll be closer to it with Varane in their side.
And what do they need then to win the title? How far off are they?
I still think they need to dominate midfield, which they haven't done so far in the last couple of seasons. They've got to be more consistent. When teams drop that little bit deeper and stay compact, they've got to find ways to play it into the front players. The front players, I think, have got to be more clever, particularly the wide players, how they receive the ball and where they receive it. And most of all, the manager's got to be more clever when teams just sit back and try and defend and make it difficult for them. But Manchester United have got some good players now. They've got so many forwards and wide players that can go past people. They've just got to be more clever in and around the box.
Well, you mentioned the manager. Everyone has agreed here on the panel that a three-year contract was not needed. He's not a threat to leave Manchester United. You've not been the biggest fan of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Has he proved you wrong at all, Robbo?
I think what he is, he's a bit like Gareth Southgate. I think he's a good man manager of the players. I think he manages the press quite well. He manages the board quite well. I don't think he's a top-class coach, and I don't think he's got anybody on his backroom staff that is a top-class coach. And we've seen that in several games when they've needed something to change. They've needed to come up with a different formula. They need to get it into the front players with more quality and get the front players making forward runs. He hasn't come out and recognised the danger, or hasn't seen what can be done. And that would be my question mark against him. Is he a top-class coach? He's probably a decent manager. He needs to be a much better coach or get someone in alongside him.
All right. Well, Shaka, we've got a question for you about centre-back pairings. Now that it's going to be Varane and Maguire, we'd like to know if you would rather be behind Varane and Maguire, Stones and Diaz, or Van Dijk and Joe Gomez?
Oh, geez, that's
Well, the best question is to ask those three pairings if they'd rather have Shaka in goal or not.
We asked them. They would all.
Oh, they declined.
I'm going to go. Moving on from Ali, I'm going to go Stones and Diaz. Van Dijk, out of the six you've mentioned, at his best is the best of the six, but just Gomez still a little bit of an unproven quantity there. But you see what Stones and Diaz, how good they can be together. You see the impact that Diaz had on Stones and his own self-confidence and the performances that he produced, not just for Manchester City, but then for England. So given those three, I'm going to go for the Man City duo.
We can spin this and ask you who you'd least like to go up against.
Let me just make it very clear that they all would love to go against me. Let's get that out of the way. I would rather go against Van Dijk and Gomez than the other two. We don't know what the recovery of Virgil van Dijk is going to be like. We don't know how long is it going to take for him to be the player that he once was. And we also don't know about Joe Gomez because he also has injury issues. And so, therefore, I think there is more uncertainty and more questions there than there are in the other two.
So who's the best pairing of the three?
I'm with Chaka. John Stones and Diaz, simply because it's a known quantity. On paper, Harry Maguire and Varane will be excellent, and you would imagine that they are both going to make each other better, but we still have to see it out on the field. We know what exactly is the product of Stones and Diaz, and it has been dominant for Manchester City.
Robbo, who would you go for of the three?
I agree with both guys. I mean, you'd go with Stones and Diaz because, again, on paper, as Ali said, Varane and Maguire could be a great pairing. But we haven't seen them play together yet. You know, they might not get on. They might have a misunderstanding between them. The coach might not get the best out of them, whether they squeeze up, drop off. So I'm going to go with Stones and Diaz as well.
OK, we're going to combine two of your loves now, Robbo, Serie A and Arsenal, because Arsenal is said to have contacted Inter with regards to Lautaro Martinez. We know that Inter have got to get some players off their books. They've got some financial troubles. What do you make of this rumour?
Martinez, on his day, is a wonderful player. Good with his back to goal. He's got that bit of pace. He can score a goal as well. But I'm going to put him in the same sort of category as Morata, because on his day, he can beat anybody. But he has too many days where he looks as though he's lost his confidence. And once he loses his confidence, he just doesn't get involved in the game. And he starts to not hold the ball up. He starts to look weak. But on his day, he's an outstanding player. Whether he has enough outstanding days if he went to Arsenal, I'm not sure, because they're not a top side at the moment.
What do you make of Lautaro Martinez, Ale?
There was a point in the career of Lautaro Martinez over the last couple of seasons that he was rumored to be going everywhere, including Barcelona, and that he was going to take a big, big, major jump. And while his relationship with Lukaku has been productive for Inter, Lukaku has shined, whereas Lautaro is sort of playing in the background a little bit. If you make a move for Lautaro Martinez to go to Arsenal, it's for him to be the guy, similar to the story of Alvaro Morata, for him to be the guy. And what we've learned from Alvaro Morata is that when he has had the chance to be the guy, it hasn't quite worked out. I think Lautaro Martinez is a better player than Alvaro Morata. I think he would be more productive than Alvaro Morata in terms of that comparison. But I do want for him to find consistency. And that is the big question that he's yet to answer.
Robbo, obviously, there's no way they'd let go of Lukaku. So you understand why there's the links with a player like Lautaro Martinez. But is there a case to be made that perhaps because of the partnership that the two of them have, it would actually damage Lukaku into not having Lautaro next to him?
I'm not sure it will, because other players have played with Lukaku and he's formed a good partnership with them. He's the player on fire, and Ali's absolutely right. He's been the main player. And Martinez, at times, was taken out the side by Conte. He was actually put on the field as a sub and taken off again when he didn't perform quite well enough. Again, he's a confidence player. And if he went to somewhere like Arsenal, would he play up front with somebody else? Could he play as the lone striker? Would he have to play with another partner? That's yet to be seen. But I think Lukaku will still be a top player at Inter if he stays there.
Lukaku. Obviously, and they're looking to build a team around Lukaku, understandably so. But while we are talking about Arsenal, Ben White for 50 million. That's a lot of money for a Brighton defender, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. Now, if you're going to bring someone like Ben White in, he's got to be the leader. He's got to be the main player. And I'm not sure Arsenal see him. When I keep reading about Arsenal talking about Ben White, you know, he's got great potential. You know, he will be a top-class player. If you're paying £50 million and Arsenal haven't got a good centre-back combination at the moment, you've got to bring him in. He's got to be your main man. He's got to be your leader. He's good on the ball coming out with it from the back. He's also got to be a good defender. He's had a good season at Brighton. He had an even better one at Leeds in the Championship. It's a lot of money to pay for a centre-half that's not proven, I wouldn't say, yet.
So what do you think their expectations and their plans are this season?
Arsenal have got to do much better than they have done in the last couple of seasons. Arteta is lucky still to be in a job. They've got to be challenging for the top four. There's no question about that. And if you're spending £50 million on a centre-half, they've done it before, spent a lot of money on young players like Chambers, like Rob Holding. They were going to be the stars of the future. And they didn't handle them particularly well. They didn't coach them particularly well. They can't let this happen with Ben White. Arsenal, if they're at their very best, will be challenging for the top four. I'm not sure, like we talked about Solskjaer, I'm not sure Arteta's the man to do it.
Ed, what do you think, Shaka?
Listen, I think this is where Arsenal are right now, whether Arsenal fans like it to be said or not. But this is the kind of player that they have to go for. Arsenal, a club with money, let's be honest, they've not spent an awful lot over the last few years. But they have to make inroads into addressing their issues. Whether Ben White is the right player or not, time will tell. But Arsenal aren't in the market for top-rated, quality, experienced defenders where you know what you're going to get. They aren't that club anymore, whether Arsenal fans like to hear it or not. They simply aren't. So they have to take these chances on young prospective talents like Ben White and hope that they come good and hope that somehow translates into better league performances, better league finishes, and then all of a sudden they may find themselves in the market for more experienced centre-backs. As per the Lautaro Martinez, I didn't think this is the market that Arsenal were in. And to Ali's point, how bad was Lautaro Martinez this season? When 12 months ago he's being linked with Barcelona, now all of a sudden it's Arsenal who seems to be the club, only club knocking at your door. The two, regardless of the inconsistencies around Martinez, I just thought that was well outside of Arsenal's target market.
Yeah, a little bit of a coincidence maybe that his form dipped after all that interest from the likes of Barcelona with Lautaro Martinez.
Are you saying it's going to go up now that Arsenal have been in? It's going to improve?
By the way, you say a chance for Ben White, that's a £50 million chance that they're taking. It's quite the gamble, I'm just going to say.
Well, that's Arsenal's market.
Okay, all right. So £50 million, huh?
What about Chelsea's market, Robbo? Because Jules Koundé has been linked with Chelsea. And this is quite a funny one, actually, because he said that he's looking for Champions League football. I'm not sure if anyone's told him that Sevilla have actually secured Champions League football for next season. So what does he mean?
He hasn't
looked
at his own team quite well enough, has he?
I don't think so. Or is he looking at what he thinks is a team that can go on to win the Champions League?
Well, maybe that was his point. But, I mean, he's an excellent centre-half. We've seen that Thomas Tuchel likes to play with three at the back, and Koundé can do most things you want from an outside centre-half. He's quick, he can read danger, he's good on the ball, he can come out with it at the right times. He's not particularly big, although he's got good spring, he can head the ball away. I think he'd be an excellent signing. He's been outstanding for Sevilla.
And Ali's been linked with Real Madrid, Manchester United, Tottenham. What would he bring to Chelsea?
All of the things that Stewie just mentioned there. But I also think that there is a personality to Jules Koundé and how important he was to Sevilla's success, and a guy that simply doesn't look afraid of the moment and afraid of playing in the big stage, in the big platform like it would be for Chelsea. Jules Koundé is ready for the big time, and Sevilla fans may go crazy and say, well, Sevilla is a big time. I'm looking at a step above that. And I think he has a profile to be that sort of player. A little undersized would be the only concern for me, but everything else seems to be working out quite well for Koundé, and it matches perfectly to what Chelsea would do on the field. But if you're Real Madrid and you have Jules Koundé in La Liga, you go and get that guy. You don't want to be depending on Nacho and Eder Militao for the rest of your life. No, no. How about you bring in and somebody who can play either alongside Alaba or can be the guy that takes the place of Sergio Ramos or Rafael Varane. There's a hole there for Real Madrid. If Koundé is there, you go get him.
Are the Premier League clubs starting to outshine Real Madrid in the transfer market in terms of who's going to get the hands on who?
It's not so much outshining Real Madrid or Barcelona as to who gets the players. It's simply because they have money. Mm-hmm. They show up to the table with a bucket full of cash. Here we go. This is what we have available. And Real Madrid shows up with an envelope. This is what we have available. That's not quite the negotiation you want to have. And so Real Madrid and Barcelona are depending on name and history rather than the actual money in front of them.
All right. Cristiano Ronaldo linked with a €55 million move to Tottenham, Robbo. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I saw him a lot last year. I thought he was an outstanding 1v1 defender. He can also come out with the ball. I don't think he's calm when he comes out with the ball. He's a bit rash, but he can come out with it and he makes good runs. Excellent pace, sees danger, good 1v1 defender. Just wonder if he can play in a two or whether he's a man to play in a three. At Atalanta, he always played in a three, so that would be my only question mark. But he's a very good player, no question about that.
It seems that we're seeing, Shaka, a lot of money talked about defensive players at the moment.
Yeah.
Does that tell us something?
It speaks to how important defenders are, which we've seen. It also speaks to the fact that you've got this crop of young defenders coming through, talented defenders, which we haven't been able to see for a very long time. When every time we talk about good defenders in world football, they've all been settled at their big clubs wherever they are, and there's been a dearth of this kind of talent and for clubs to go after. And that's what you're seeing now. That's a market, you know, in a similar way that Right now, we're talking about a handful of strikers. That's what we were talking about two or three years ago, where there weren't defenders worth mentioning, in all honesty.
And just a quick mention on Cristian Romero. When you think about the success of Argentina in Copa America, it is very easy to point at Lionel Messi and say, oh, this was the moment for Lionel Messi. But the way that Argentina played this Copa America, players like Cristian Romero were incredibly important to their success. They were angular pieces, and Romero in particular was outstanding. So it is not a surprise that there are teams out there that would be interested in his services, because this is a guy that over the last couple seasons has really come around and at the international level has been outstanding for Argentina, certainly was in Copa America.
Yep, a lot more transfer talk is available over on our website. Make sure you visit there if you would like to keep up to date with all the latest rumors. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Max Allegri back at Juve and been talking about Cristiano Ronaldo. Said Ronaldo is an extraordinary player and an intelligent guy. Uh-huh. I told him that it will be an important season. He will have a completely different and greater responsibility than 3 years ago. He can't just be a goal scorer.
Oh.
I expected him to take responsibility as the man he is. I can only imagine the difficulties that have been here over these 2 years. Robbo, a greater responsibility. Mm-hmm. Well, we know what to expect from Max Allegri. We know that he expects all his players to put a shift in all across the pitch. Mm. Are we going to be seeing Ronaldo tracking back?
What?
No, I think it's going a totally different way. I see Allegri saying, and this is what I thought about Ronaldo last season, yes, he scored goals, but in the very big games and when things weren't going his own way, he started to go out to the left wing, he started to go to the right wing, he started to drop into midfield, and Pirlo wanted him to play up front with Morata and form a combination and be in the box when balls were crossed. And too many times he went away from those areas. So I think Max Allegri is actually saying, I want you to be the main centre forward, play alongside another one, whoever it may be up front, and you, every time we cross the ball into the box, you're going to get on the end of it. When we're going from back to front, you're going to hold it up and link up with the other centre forward and bring others into play. You've got to be the main striker. That's what I think Allegri's saying, and that's exactly what I was saying last season, because I thought Ronaldo went away from being a responsible player and went where he wanted to go, and sometimes it was away from the danger area in the big games.
There are a few ways you could read that quote. Obviously, that's what Robbo's taken from it there. Because then he ends it by saying he can't imagine what he's been through these last 2 years.
Uh-huh.
What did you make of it, guys?
The suffering, the frustrations, the lack of chances, lack of creativity, lack of opportunities. And so therefore, Ronaldo, not only are you going to be a goal scorer for us, you're going to have more responsibility in what we do in the attack. Because otherwise, we're not going to create much. Now, I don't know how realistic is it for Cristiano Ronaldo at this point in his career to be a creative player and a goal scorer at the same time. He has never been a back-to-goal sort of guy, so I don't expect that to start now at age 36. And so what do we want from Cristiano Ronaldo? I would suggest, if you're Allegri, that you say to yourself, if I know this guy's going to score 36 goals for me, or whatever the amount is, then how about I take care of the things around him? And so, yes, I make him the pivotal point of the attack inside the 18-yard box, and then the things that I have to concern myself with is the creativity around him. That was the biggest issue for me in Juventus, is that once they got into the attacking half, this team became so very predictable and so very slow.
The thing for me, though, is in Allegri's statement is, take more responsibility. And I find that kind of vague. As take more responsibility to do what? What are you asking of Cristiano Ronaldo now in terms of responsibility to the team? To Robbo's point, are you really seeing, I want you to drop into midfield and be the kind of creative spark, have that responsibility? Or it can't just be about goals, because he's delivered that for 3 years. So that's not in question either. So I find that his suggesting that Ronaldo hasn't taken enough responsibility, a really odd one. And I don't know how to interpret, because I think he has done. He was brought to deliver goals. He's done that. What else are you asking of him if you, by way of responsibility? I just don't get it.
Robbo, with Max Allegri back and Ronaldo potentially staying, are they favourites for the Scudetto?
Yes, they are, because Inter obviously are going to lose a lot of their players. Milan weren't quite good enough. Napoli, I don't think, are quite good enough. So Juventus have to be the favourites. And I go back to what the guys are saying there. Ali was a goal scorer and the centre forward. Where are you going to score goals? Where are you going to be have major responsibility? Right down the middle, right up front. And that's where Ronaldo has to play. He has to be in the box every time the ball's played in there. He has to be maybe with his back to goal, in and around the box, turning, getting shots away. That's the responsibility he has to take on his shoulders.
He might not be too responsible for the free kicks if what Max Allegri was alluding to in that press conference is Miralem Pjanic returning. He said it's a right-footed player who is good at set pieces. Can you see this happening?
Well, I think he's always been a good player for Juventus before he left. I think he's an upgrade on Arthur, who didn't really get going last year. Bentancur, who played in that position. I don't think he's not a one that's going to link up the play. He's more of a forward runner, so I don't think that suited him. Pjanic coming back, I think he could link everything up. He'd be like Pirlo was when he was at Juventus, as Pjanic was before. I think it works for Juve.
It was already a strange move with him going to Barcelona, and it didn't turn out right, did it, Ali?
And he just looked out of place. From the very beginning of Barcelona, it just never seemed to work. And whenever you felt like, okay, this is now the opportunity for him to play, he wasn't very good. And we just have to say that. As good as he may have been for Juventus, he was not that for Barcelona. And whether it's a style of play, whether it's a system, a new manager, new setup, whatever the case may have been, Pjanic never settled in. Injuries were a problem, and whenever he was actually healthy and ready to go, and he had opportunities to play because Sergio Busquets was struggling early on in the season, he didn't do the job. He did not carry out his responsibilities, and so therefore, it is not a surprise to me that he may be going elsewhere, because simply, you look at Pjanic at Barcelona, it was a bust. It never really worked out.
There might be a sigh of relief from him, though, because going to that Barcelona, everything that was happening there, to know that you'd be going back to Juventus with Max Allegri back at the helm there, got to be attractive for Pjanic.
Absolutely. It was an absolute disaster of a year for Pjanic, as both guys rightly mentioned. Just never seemed to work. And then given a lot of the blame game that was going around in Barcelona for a lot of their failures, fingers pointed at him, because I, for one, thinking Pjanic, with his experience, his passing ability, coming and sitting in that midfield for Barcelona, exactly the kind of player that Messi would want to have servicing him, and yet Pjanic never really got out of the gates. So coming back to a team and a league that he knows and flourished in, absolutely, he's happy to put that disaster behind him. Make no mistake about it, for all the issues that Barcelona have on the field, they have a ton more off it. And I think that affected the team. Pjanic probably happy to put both those behind him now.
Yeah, definitely. The guys will be answering your questions in extra time. Make sure you stick around for that. Oh. And you can always catch it daily, including Stevie's hair. Over on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to ESPN FC.
Stevie's blind, by the way. Those glasses. What prescription is that?
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Who remembers this moment? It's a Carabao Cup final back in 2019. Kepa refusing to come off as Maurizio Sarri was getting Willy Caballero, the penalty specialist, ready to come on at the end of extra time. Sarri said afterwards it was a misunderstanding, but the report stated that in the dressing room it was very much another story, so Kepa would not come off and stayed on, and we all know how this one ended. And Man City won 4-3 on penalties. Now, the reason we're bringing this up, and you see Sarri very, very angry.
That's the solution. I'm leaving. No, wait. Game's not over.
It's because there's been a new update on it. Kepa has been speaking to the Players' Tribune, and he said that Sarri thought that I couldn't go on. My intention, right or wrong, had only been to waste time to help the team. I tried to signal that I was okay, that I wasn't injured, but we were at Wembley in front of more than 80,000 people, so of course Sarri didn't understand me. When the fourth official raised the board, clearly I should have come off, and I'm sorry I didn't. I was wrong, and I'm sorry for everyone who was involved. Most people who saw the pictures thought that I had disrespected Maurizio. I felt misunderstood because it had never been my intention to snub the coach. Well, this is all very interesting, isn't it? This sounds like he's saying sorry to Sarri. In fact, he pretty much is apologising here. Is he anchoring for a move to Lazio?
Well, that's quite a connection. I have no idea why 2 years later he's actually having this conversation and why he's saying these things. The other thing that I would say is what he's telling us, look, I'm sorry to Maurizio Sarri, but I was actually faking. I wasn't injured at all. It was no problem, no issue whatsoever. So I don't know how I feel about Kepa. Is it brave for him to stay on the field when he's injured, or is he just, a guy that is taking advantage of the situation and was embellishing an injury that was never there? What's even worse is that Sarri, he gone, and Kepa, he gone too. And it's just a matter of time. And so neither one of them have benefited from this moment and this situation.
Why now, Xhaka? And let's talk a little bit about that moment as a goalkeeper yourself.
Okay, talking about the moment first, I totally understand what Kepa is saying in terms of wasting time. As a goalkeeper, you're in a unique position. If you're going to waste time, you're the perfect man to do it, because there's no such thing as, well, just shuffle him off to the side for a minute and let him come back on. You have to deal with the goalie while he's on.
He may have pushed the boundary just a little too far.
I understand that. But if in the first shot, when Kepa throws his hand up, as instant as that may look, that's a universal sign for I am really badly injured. So if you're faking, you don't throw a hand up. Right? That's another unwritten rule of faking injuries.
Take us through the faces.
That's just another unwritten rule, right? So he got that wrong. And then how he remonstrated and his body language to Sarri after that, I thought was all wrong. But to your first question, Kay, why now? I think Kepa is in the process of trying to fix his reputation. And that played a big part in how he's still seen. That and some of his earlier errors, which in terms of goalkeeping, I think when you saw him last season, he did a lot to address. When you saw him last season, albeit as number two for Mendy, he looked a solid goalkeeper. Not a $75 million goalkeeper, but he looked a solid goalkeeper. And now angling for, if I'm his agent, and I'm angling for a move away from Stamford Bridge, I need to address that issue. I need to address that falling out with the manager and everything that came of it. And this is one way to do that, by just being kind of humble and apologetic about it in the media. So I understand it.
But don't stop there, because then you also have to address what was the controversy with Frank Lampard. Because the behavior of Kepa continued on from Sarri onto Frank Lampard, to the point to where Lampard essentially said, this guy cannot be my goalkeeper. See you later. Bring me whoever. I'll put him in goal. So
Lampard never fancied Kepa. He was always angling to get him out. So you understand Kepa's kind of reaction to that.
Okay. Yeah, sure. But then if you're going to rebuild your image, don't just say, hey, I'm sorry to Sarri. Address the issues of the mistakes that you made under Frank Lampard as well.
Robert, what's your take on it? Why has Kepa apologised now?
I'm not quite sure why he's apologising now. And tell me if I'm wrong, but surely a physio came onto the pitch to sort of treat him, and he might have said to him at the time, actually, I'm not injured, you know, just get that back to the boss, I'm not injured, I'm just wasting a bit of time, and then the issue would have been sorted out. But I think it's come down to Kepa. While he's been at Chelsea, he hasn't been good enough. He hasn't been a top-class goalkeeper. And that's why Frank Lampard eventually didn't fancy him, and probably Sarri didn't fancy him that much after that incident. So Kepa's caused his own problems, really.
Yeah, it turns out that Sarri does not seem to be the hardest word. We'll end it there. Don't forget that if you want more anecdotes like this...
No,
not like that.
No, please,
not like that.
You can always download the podcast in case you're
You didn't even believe on it, because the beating of the drums wasn't exactly full commitment.
It is available wherever you get your podcast. Now 17 days until La Liga kicks off on ESPN, and we're bringing you a club a day as we count down to kick off. Today it is Granada, a club that upset the odds in the Europa League last season, where they eliminated Napoli to reach the last 16. They have gone from the Spanish second division, La Segunda, to European football in the space of 2 years. We've seen them in a Copa del Rey semi-final, and we've also seen them finishing ninth and seventh the season before. So it's been a meteoric rise for Granada. We've got Ali Moreno and Gemma Soler now to talk about this. But all change, Gemma, because Diego Martinez, the man that led them to all this success, will not be with them this season. It's Roberto Moreno coming in. So what can we expect there?
Hello, Kay. Ali, nice talking to you. It's definitely an exciting season for Granada coming ahead, because, of course, they had the best season in their 19 years history. Last season, they managed to play in Europe. And they finished in that last eight against Man United with quite dignity, also in Old Trafford. So supporters are quite excited. In one side, it's true, they were very sad because in their best season, they couldn't attend the stadium, the Nuevo Estadio de los Cármenes, but they will be able to do it this season. It's true, Diego Martinez, probably the key of that success, won't be there, probably because he's aware that he cannot do it any better next season. But Robert Moreno, the former Spanish coach, is starting working already. He's coming, of course, with another chance to demonstrate that he can do it in the elite as a coach. And he has two exciting signings, like Carlos Bacca, the Colombian striker, and also Monchu from Girona. He played really well in this team that almost make it to the first division. So it's quite an exciting year for Granada fans, Kate.
And a different task for them, Gemma, this year, because obviously we've seen them securing European football the season before. We've seen this rise that's been wonderful for them and unexpected. But this season, is the objective to just stay up?
Well, it's consolidate in the first division, in Primera División, because we have to take into account that last year was an absolute dream, their best year ever. They managed to be in Europe, with 2 years ago being the third team with the lowest budget in La Liga. Of course, this year will be better because they played in Europe. They have more money. They finished ninth. But they cannot dream with being in Europe again. They want to consolidate. It's only been 3 seasons in a row in the first division now. They want to keep the Diego Martinez style, being very strong at home, trying to make it well also in stadiums like the Camp Nou, like they did last season. And this is probably the most reasonable goal. But as we said, fans are very excited. They have already 10,000 members. They bought the tickets for the whole season at home, and they want to push their team, because of course it was a pity they couldn't do it last year in that exceptional season.
Absolutely, and obviously we've seen a veteran forwards in this team. We've seen the likes of Roberto Soldado and Jorge Molina, and as Gemma just mentioned, yeah, Ale, Carlos Bacca now signing for them. Does he still have a lot to offer? We've seen him, he's got receipts in La Liga.
Well, he's got something to offer. I don't know if it's a lot to offer. There's a reason as to why Carlos Bacca ends up at Granada, and that is, well, he wasn't getting a lot of playing time at Villarreal, and he was coming off the bench and trying to get an opportunity here and there, but Gerard Moreno wasn't playing in front of him, and so there wasn't an opportunity for him to play consistently. So he ends up at Granada, and what is he doing? Well, he's taking the place of Roberto Soldado. Say what you will about Roberto Soldado, but he was an important part of the success to Granada, not only in scoring goals, but a sense of leadership and a sense of presence. Can Carlos Bacca provide that? Well, you assume he would. Still, though, when you think of Granada and the expectations that Gemma is talking about, it would be unrealistic to think of this team as matching whatever they did last season, simply because last season was the first time in history that they did all the things that they achieved. And Diego Martinez no longer in the picture. I think that is a big, big, major change for Granada. And as to what we expect from this team, on the field, Yangel Herrera no longer with the group. He was a presence in that midfield. Jesus Vallejo, he's gone back on his loan to Real Madrid, so he's not available either. There are some holes in this team that they have to fill, and it's a group, to me, that should be looking for priority number one, staying in the first division, staying in La Liga, consolidating, as Gemma is talking about. This is a team that over the last two seasons has finished 7th and 9th. So it would suggest that they would have enough to be in La Liga. But that's the first priority. And once you sort that out, then you can still now think about the big dreams and the big thoughts of maybe perhaps making another run in Europe. Until then, priority number one, stay on top, stay in the first division, stay in La Liga.
Lastly as well, Gemma, we must mention what a wonderful place Granada is for anybody who is looking to travel there. Once travel restrictions are eased, it's definitely worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to combine them. I would say it's in my top five of Spanish cities, definitely. It's amazing. They have the Sierra Nevada, the mountains, the Alhambra, of course, which is the second most visited monument in Spain, just after La Sagrada Familia. I'm going to combine them. It's the city with more pubs per capita in Europe, also with more university students and Erasmus in Europe. So there is a lot of atmosphere in that city. It's the fourth more touristic city in Spain after Barcelona, Madrid, and Sevilla. And last but not least, you can have dinner with only ordering beers. It's like a tradition. You go to a bar, you order a beer, and they give you a very generous tapa, a big tapa. It could be a cooked tapa. It's not like in Madrid, Kay, you live there. When you order a beer, maybe you have some olives, some chips. No, no, no. In Granada, we're talking about a big, big tapa and delicious tapa. So only ordering a couple of drinks, you can have dinner.
Yeah, se come bien in Granada. And it's probably not bien. Too expensive either to get the beer that will get that tapa to come with it. So great to hear from you, Gemma. If you are looking to support Granada, we think we've just given you some wonderful reasons to do so. We'll continue with the countdown to La Liga, and tomorrow we'll be focusing on Valencia. Edging ever closer to week one in La Liga. And this is Jornada One with all the fixtures, as you can see. If you are looking to see how Granada will fare, they will be up against the Europa League holders, Villarreal, on August 16th at 2 p.m. Eastern. All the games will be available on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, this might prove to be some wonderful transfer business. Danielle Marlin has signed for Borussia Dortmund for 30 million euros. Can you imagine him and Haaland up top for Borussia Dortmund next season? Definitely.
Alongside Haaland or to replace Haaland?
Oh, only time will tell.
Controversy.
See you next time on ESPN FC. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We are still talking about Stevie Nicholls' hair, Ali Moreno, Shaka Hislop, and Stuart Robson with us. And so that's where we'll start, because the contrarian Robbo would like to know, how do you like Stevie's new hairstyle?
Hang on, you're coming to me about hairstyles. I'm completely the wrong person. But I've got to say, it's woeful, isn't it? I mean, what was he thinking? I mean, it's just
I think it's great.
Look at that.
No. I heard someone say it was karma for him making fun of you and your hair art.
Yeah, you might be right, you know, because he does like to have a go at me, about me being bald. I think, you know, I've been to HR about it on several occasions, but nothing's been done.
Would you rather have no hair or Stevie's hair?
Oh, no hair. Yeah. If I had a choice there, I'd have Jules Laurent's hair. He's got a nice quiff, hasn't he? I could do with a bit of that, I think.
Yeah, he's got a decent head of hair. OK, next up, Rahul Belamconda says, will Real Madrid be contenders for any of the titles next season with the departures of the stalwarts of their defence, both in the same season? How high does Hazard rank in the worst Real Madrid signing? So let's break this into two. First of all, the defence.
Well, first of all, can I just tell you that Stevie got that haircut for a photo shoot that we were supposed to have, a promotional photo shoot, right?
It's getting better.
Right. Here's the problem. And here's the part that perhaps we did not update you with. That photo shoot was canceled. So therefore, Stevie got a haircut for no reason.
Was it canceled because of the haircut?
No.
Because if you ask me, that haircut is reason enough to cancel the
No, it was canceled before we knew of Stevie's haircut. So his attempt at looking better ended up looking worse, was actually not necessary in the end. Okay. So what was your question, Kay?
Real Madrid's defense. Let's start. With the departure of them, are they still the departure of the stalwarts of the defense? Will they still be title contenders?
Well, no, they're not favorites, but this is still Real Madrid, and there is a historical significance and importance to this club that would suggest they're going to be in the top three in Spain, regardless of who's playing in that back line. I don't know who else is going to challenge Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, realistically challenge, and so therefore Real Madrid, will be right there where they need to be. But you cannot survive on Eder Militao, Nacho, Jesus Vallejo, and a combination of whoever else is available to them. If indeed they're going to challenge for big things, and big things at Real Madrid is not only a La Liga title, but of course you're talking about Champions League and everything else that comes with being part of Real Madrid, then they're going to have to get better defensively, but they're also going to have to get better through the middle, and more importantly, get productivity up top from somebody else other than Karim Benzema.
Shaka, I'll ask you the second part of the question then. How high does Hazard rank as their, like, in terms of their worst signings?
It's got to be up there, worst signings ever. I mean, that's a lot of money to spend on a player who produced as little as Hazard did. But in Real Madrid's defense, Hazard at Chelsea was worth every bit of the money they spent on him. Mm. Hazard at Real Madrid, about as good as Stevie's haircut.
What do you think of that Hazard part of it, Robbo?
Well, the problem he had was in the, I think it was in the pre-season game that he played against Atletico Madrid. He got injured. And when you go to a new club, you've got to make an impression straight away to the other players, to the fans, to the manager. He got injured, was out for a little while. And when he came back, he didn't look fully fit. He then lost confidence. And it was a snowball effect. And he's been really poor. So it's been a bad signing. Just hasn't got going. He needs probably a move.
I'm not too sure what the next question means, so read into it what you will, Ali. It's for you. Dilan Djembere says, Ali, is Barca and Madrid on their way to becoming Milan and Inter, or we ain't there yet?
Not quite there yet, because they're not threatened by anybody else other than Atletico Madrid in La Liga. And so, therefore, you can hang on to the possibility of always winning a title and being in competition for a title in your domestic league. But I take the point, and I understand where they're coming from in the sense that at one point, Milan and Inter were dominant teams not only in Italy but around the world. And their inability to financially make the decisions that were required, that were responsible, that it wasn't just about getting the big names, that you actually had a plan in place. Things that you can point at Barcelona and Real Madrid over the last few seasons and say, yeah, there are some similarities there. They're not quite in danger of going on a slide just yet, but they're certainly getting to the point to where they have to turn it around right away.
All right. Dan the Orange Man, Shaka, I'll ask you this. How long do you expect it will take Van Dijk to be back to his best? Is it difficult to get back up to speed after such a lengthy injury?
Traditionally, it has been. That kind of injury has, in years gone by, back in my playing day, it was potentially a career ender. And albeit the science has moved on extensively since, players come back and you see them at varying degrees of how good they are when they come back. So right now you're just hoping for the best for Virgil van Dijk, that he does recover and is back to 90% of his former self. 90% of Virgil van Dijk pre-injury is still one of the best defenders in world football. So that's what you're hoping for Liverpool's sake at the least. But nobody can truly answer that until we see him back on the
pitch. That's true. Robbo, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I had lots of injuries, so I know what it's like to come back. I was out for actually a year and a half and came back and played when everybody said I wouldn't play again. So it's all important that your rehabilitation and the work you do is top class. And you've got the right people alongside you, mentally as well. The psychologists have to get into you and say, well, you're not going to get injured again. You have to make sure you're fully fit. You have to start when you do come back. You don't try and ease your way back into it. You go flat out right from the start and try and play at your best. I think Van Dijk would have got good advice. I think he's a good professional. I think he'll be maybe 90% to start with. He'll be 100% by Christmas time, I think.
All right, let me see.
I don't quite see Stewie taking pointers from a psychologist. I just don't quite see what sitting in there.
That's the best thing I did. That's why he retired and became an analyst 30 years ago.
He said it's the best thing he did.
I did it when I was getting back to fitness because, retired. Everybody wanted me to retire, but I came back. You need a psychologist to tell you, you are the player you were a year and a half ago. You can still play at the top level. You're going to be injured every 5 minutes. And that's what got into your mind and that you had to get it out of your mind. And the psychologist is a big part of an injured player's sort of recovery.
All right, let me stick with you then, Robbo, for this next one, because Kartik would like to know, as a player, how much does the history of a club drive you towards signing for them, or is it fully defined by their current levels?
For me, it's all about their current levels, and it would all be about the manager, because if I liked the manager and I got on well with him and I knew he liked me as a player, everything was rosy. If I came across a manager that didn't like me and I didn't like him, big problems. And that only happened on two occasions. So I think it's about how you get on with the manager, what the club are doing at that particular time. Does their style of football suit you? That's got to be key to whether you join or not.
The next one is to do with something that's gone on with Wayne Rooney in Derby County. What do you make of a Derby County player now being sidelined for 2 months after a tackle from his manager, Wayne Rooney? Did your managers ever participate in training, Shaka?
No, because you knew what was coming. There is no way any manager I played under would step on the field with half of that dressing rooms I shared, because they'd be coming for the manager.
Quick story, little story time. We had a new manager in place with the LA Galaxy, and one of his assistants was this guy that kind of handled the videos and such, and he was a little annoying to me. And he's always talking, and he was always giving pointers, and didn't quite express himself the way that he should towards players, sometimes spoke down to players. And at one point, we're playing 11v11, and the reserve team was short on players because of injuries and whatever. So he stepped in as a right back. Ball was played over the top, and he's running flat out as if he's gonna get to this ball. And I see him coming, and I have the angle on this ball. And I said to myself, well, you're here to play, I'm here to dance, let's go. He went for the challenge, and I full on. Balled up and just given the full-on treatment, shoulder to shoulder, clean challenge, onto the advertising board. Sure. There you go.
Shoulder to shoulder.
And then
I wasn't there, and I know that's a lie.
He gets up and he says, "You can't do that to a coach." I said, "You step in this line, so you're no longer a coach. You want to play? Then let's play."
Yeah, let's dance.
I was benched the rest of the season, but that's okay. It was well worth it.
Yeah, of course, it was well worth it. And you've got the anecdote as well to tell us now on Extra Time. What about you, Robbo?
Oh, there's somebody that you know very well, or you've had a lot of dealings with. Bobby Gould was manager of Coventry, and I was the captain, and I could not stand him at all. He couldn't stand me, and he used to think he could play. He used to come on the training field. Oh, dear. Big, big mistake. He was stretched off, that's all I will say.
Yeah,
it wasn't a great challenge from me, but he was stretched off and had treatment for about 3 weeks.
Robbo
was the captain of Coventry. Hold on. Robbo was the captain of Coventry. For Bobby Gould, Gould hates Robbo, Robbo hates Gould, Robbo is the captain.
Well, yeah.
Keep going. He tried to take the captaincy off me. He tried to take the captaincy off me when he turned up, but he didn't get his way to start with. He did eventually.
So it was a doomed relationship from the start, Robbo.
It certainly was. Yeah, I was the captain and the player of the year before. He joined. And his first words to me were, "You had far too much influence on this team. I'm going to change that," which was not a great thing to say to the captain and the player of the year.
Yeah,
I didn't
think. That's fair enough.
I'm great fair with enough. Bobby Gould when I worked with him on the radio. I had no problems with him.
Wow. Yeah. Likeable guy? Easy to get along with?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that speaks about Robbo, right? Just kidding, Robbo.
No, you would. Don't try to back out, no.
His actual words were, "Whenever he sees me, you're the hardest player I ever had to deal with." And I think he wasn't talking about my tackling. He was talking about dealing with me mentally.
Oh, dear. All right. This is the different side to it, then. For Xhaka, who was his favourite goalkeeping coach?
Ooh. Favourite goalkeeping coach? Oh, that's easy. Terry Gano at Newcastle United.
And what did you like so much about him?
Terry was...
Days off.
So I had really good relationships with Terry at Newcastle and Les Sealy at West Ham. Terry just knew the position like nobody else, and I thought he was a great technical coach. Les Sealy understood me better than anybody else, and we had a really good relationship on and off the park. I think I played my best football at West Ham with Les Sealy, and I don't think that's an accident, but. Just in terms of pure coaching, Terry Gannon was second to none.
Uh-huh. And Terry understood that when you were coming back from Trinidad and Tobago, and it has been a rough weekend, that maybe we don't push it so hard, Shaq.
Don't kick the ball so hard, Terry. It's a delicate week this week.
Yes.
Pump the brakes.
So that might be why he's your favourite. Lastly, Mohammed says, did Stuart want the FIFA 22 role, or was he approached for it? I always enjoy his co-commentary on Serie A. Thumbs up.
I was approached for it and had to do an audition and won the audition, I suppose. So, yes, that's how I got on to do the game, which I didn't know was published at the moment. It was all meant to be top secret, but obviously you've just blurted it out, Kate.
Well, Mohammed seems to be the man in the know.
Well,
obviously so.
Maybe Mohammed is Chewie's burner account.
So, maybe. So as we are talking about it, did you enjoy the experience, Robbo?
Moving on, I think it's been a great show so far.
That's
no, it's actually, it's a good experience. It's very tough. I've got to say, it's the toughest thing I've ever done, but it's a great experience.
That's the toughest thing he's done, but the toughest thing Bobby Gould's done is had to manage.
Right. So what we know is that both of them may have needed some team psychologists to deal with the really tough situation.
Apparently not, from what Keir's saying. Yeah. Bobby Gould's a very nice man.
Ah, so Rob was the problem.
Maybe. Although I knew Bobby Gould in his later years, rather than I've worked with him after he stopped managing, so maybe he's a bit more chill. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know.
When I think of Stewie...
I'll give him a ring and ask him, Robbo.
I know, when I think of Stewie, I think of later years as well.
Yeah, when I think of Stewie, I think later years, and I also think he's very chill. That's exactly what I think when it comes to Stewie. Chill.
Yeah.
No?
Chill.
Yeah. Chilled. Chilled. Calm. Composed. Chilled. Yeah.
No.
Cool.
That's
calm.
Me. You've got it. You've got it, Ali. You're the only person that's actually got me right, Ali.
I know. Nobody does a hit outside of Wembley like Stewie does.
I think that's it. That's it for your questions today on Extra Time. Thank you so much for sending them in. There were some good ones there. Don't
okay, forget. Ali wanted some ice cream.
What?
Ali wanted some ice cream, Kay.
And so what happened?
Oh, yeah.
Kay ate all.
What?
I ate the rest of the
she
ice cream.
She ate all with a coffee stirrer. She didn't even have a spoon. She didn't have a spoon. She had a tub of ice cream with a coffee stirrer.
Available selfish. Daily. ESPN FC. Not ESPN Plus.
Selfish. So, did you or what? Where's the ice cream?
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LectricEbikes.com.